How's it going? And welcome to episode 220 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings. Thank you all for listening and watching. We got a great show lined up for you as always. Glad to be back myself. I know I always started off with as always, but I feel like we've been a little spotty, Kevin, being side by side so far this season, at least in the summer. We were just talking about a lot of moving around, a lot of traveling for me and my family. As we were venturing to Tennessee for a wedding and then a couple of other family gatherings and what have you. So it was a good time, but missed being here with you. Good job last week, and glad to be back, man. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Great to have you back, Adam. Shout out to Britton Allen for hanging out with me last week, going almost 2-hour episode. And apologies, I misinformed our listeners and told them you were working last week. I really thought you were. I wasn't trying to cover for you there.
I mean, I was working throughout the week remotely, but I wasn't traveling for work, unfortunately. Or fortunately, I don't know how you want, however you're looking at it. But you know, I learned this actually quite recently. I didn't grow up in the Midwest. I live in Indianapolis now, so right in the heart of it now. Been here for about 7 years. And I had to drive to Nashville about 9 months ago for work. And my boss is like, hey, can you go to Nashville for this event? I'm like, sure. It's only about a 4.5-5 hour drive for me. I'll head over there, when I need to. And he's like, apparently that's a very Midwest thing to say. To be able to say, yeah, it's just a 5-hour drive. I'll do that. Growing up in the Northeast, not something I considered, even though there's a lot of different major metropolitan areas to visit within no matter where you are in the Northeast, you can get to multiple major metropolitan areas within a 4-hour drive easily enough. And then living on the West Coast in Oakland, I mean, you have to drive at least, 5 or 6 hours to go from the Bay to LA, and there's nothing else in between except for, almond trees and cow pastures. Obviously there's a little bit more than that, but people who have driven the 5 understand what I'm talking about. It just apparently just became part of me. It is probably the only Midwest part of my personality that has come through. If I'm admitting anything. That's a thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I grew up in the Midwest. Kansas City was 2.5 hours away. Even Denver was 8 hours away. That was a fairly common trip.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, at least that's a pretty trip to go all the way. If you're going to make a long drive,
Nebraska, you see nothing but corn for hours at a time. Nothing. Not even other vehicles at times.
But at least if you know you're going all the way to Denver, you can power through the corn until you finally see the mountains.
Exactly.
All right. Well, enough chit chat here. We've got a decent amount of news, not as much news, I think, as you talked about with Britton last week, but enough to hold us over for this episode. Let's get into the one that happened right at the beginning of the week, right after Fab ran. And it hit me hard because the one league that I spent definitely triple digits on this player went down the drain because I had decided finally to drop him. I mean, that's Chandler Simpson, who had been sent down by Tampa Bay a couple weeks ago. This was that league I had mentioned a couple weeks ago that I had a little bit of a buffer in stolen bases. So I'd been thinking about dropping my Rapids anyway. This was the time. And of course, as soon as I drop him, he becomes available again as they call him back up, sending Cameron Meisner down, being optioned to AAA himself. So this was exactly the reverse of when Simpson got sent down. Meisner was reactivated and Simpson was sent down. Now they're finding themselves in reverse positions here. For my league and other leagues where people had dropped Simpson, do you see the same type of bids? Maybe not the dollar amounts because people don't have as much money as they once did, but the percentage of leftover Fab being spent on Simpson just to get that one, if not two, category bump?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. I expect this. Yes, we'll talk about Chase Burns here in a bit, but Chandler Simpson, with it being stolen bases and with us seeing it at the major league level, 19 stolen bases in 38 games, already a stolen base here on Friday in his fourth game back with about 80 games to go, roughly. All teams within, you know, the last couple of days or the next day or two are crossing that 81 game mark halfway home. But with 80 games to go, that's another 40 stolen bases possibly if he keeps up this pace, which isn't crazy because we've seen him steal over 100 in a season in the minors. So, yeah, absolutely. I think as you said, it'll be a little lower bids because people don't have as much money, but in some leagues if the players that missed out do happen to be one or right. two of the teams remaining that do have some money, they're probably going to try to go a little higher to ensure they get him. So yeah, the bids could be right there where they were last time in some leagues, but generally slightly lower for the reason you stated, I think.
Yeah, I think that we're even it's even more likely people bid up as the season progresses for a one or two category player like Simpson. I value Simpson a lot higher in like a head-to-head league or a head-to-head categories league where, you know, you could win that like one player could play half the week and win the category for you. Right. But in a roto league, if you're going to pay up for that one category, it better be the category that you can make the most impact. And as we get deeper and deeper into the season, that category for each team becomes more and more apparent. And if you have the money and you could bid up, that's the area that you can make the most impact on your standings, then yeah, of course you should be spending the money on it because you have a more direct line to increasing your standing in your standings. All right. Well, I like your tease, by the way, on the Chase Burns. We'll get to him a little bit later. He wasn't even on the rundown as I'm looking at this a little bit deeper. I'm like, oh, I got to add him in. So he's going to the end. Maybe I'll just sneak him in somewhere. So no fast forwarding. You gotta listen to the whole thing. Let's go into New York Mets territory where Luis Angel Acuna, Francisco Alvarez, and Jared Young were optioned to AAA by the Mets. Alvarez happened right at the end on Sunday, actually, as well. Mark Vientos returned on Friday. He was hitting sixth as the DH for the Mets as we're recording this right now on Friday evening. A lot of moving parts here, Kevin. But I mean, a lot of these options happened early in the week. As I mentioned, Alvarez at the very onset of the week on Sunday before the week even flipped. So what have we seen so far, and what do you expect, especially with Vientos returning into the mix as well?
Well, it appears to me that Vientos is going to be locked into a DH spot for a while. And this could depend on performance as well. He was struggling for much of the first couple of months of the season. But if he can hit the ground running, and maybe the injury had something to do with why he wasn't performing as well, I think we all expected the batting average to come down a little bit from his breakout in 2024, but not quite to the extent it did. Right. But so this, you know, Starlin Marte wasn't really getting enough playing time to be useful in weekly and even NFBC format leagues where we can change our lineup on Friday. Just very sporadic playing time. And so he's going to lose some of that, I believe. And also Jared Young got sent down. He was the other DH. So half of the time is already lined up for Vientos. I think Marte loses some time here as well. And hopefully Vientos can get rolling and start piling up some home runs like he did last season.
Yeah, Vientos is definitely one of the bigger disappointments of at least my season, where I grabbed him in a couple places where I was just banking on third base power or corner power at that point in the draft. So would like to see that come to fruition, come at least a little bit closer to what we were seeing. I don't even need a full return in the batting average. I just need the power. I just need the home runs from him. Speaking of disappointing home runs, I guess, or not getting them, the Reds won't be getting them from Jaime Candelario, as he was designated for assignment. And here, finally, I will just combine all the other Reds notes.
Yeah, there's a lot of Reds moves.
Well, sticking with the lineup, which will not have Jaime Candelario anymore, it will also be without Jake Fraley, who hits the IL, while Austin Hayes takes his place in the lineup, being activated himself. Chase Burns, as everybody is aware by now, made his MLB debut in the rotation. So, of course, the question is, how long does he stick into that rotation, and how much do you see him going for in bids? At the same time, maybe not as many moving parts as what we just talked about with the Mets, but still a lot of moving parts in the lineup for the Reds. What kind of impact are you expecting as far as playing time? Is somebody going to take a little bit more? Are we expecting somebody to, you know, is Hayes going to get the kind of playing time with, you know, being a one-for-one swap with Jake Fraley? Overall thoughts on the Reds. Let's start with their lineup and then we'll hit their rotation.
I just hope Hayes can give us a nice little period of good health here, because at times this season, when healthy, he's looked really, really good, but he hasn't been healthy very often. I think the Reds are going to give him the playing time as long as he's healthy, because of how he has performed when healthy. We're looking at, and the Reds were already doing this. Rhys Hines is only going to play versus lefties. Santiago Espinal, for the most part, versus lefties. So yeah, I think it does work out with Fraley hitting the IL there. I think Austin Hayes hopefully can, and I didn't check his ownership. I'm gonna check it really quick in 15s, because I think he was probably dropped in some spots, not in 15, still 98% rostered, but he will have a little bit of availability in 12s. He's been great when healthy. Only 80% rostered in the 12 team online championship. So it's worth checking in your leagues if Austin Hayes is available. I do think this is pretty much a one for one, and he's going to play every day.
Yeah. And of course, going back to Jaime Candelario, he'd been missing from the lineup for a long time anyway, from Cincinnati. Being on the IL just kind of hurts when you come back from the IL and then, all right,
exactly.
Oh man, does he get picked up anywhere in short order?
I don't know about short order, but you know, teams don't expand as much as they used to, but I could see a team adding him for some depth and early enough, but before September 1st, so that he would be eligible for their postseason roster if they need that depth. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Man, and then going into the rotation here, Chase Burns, this is quite the potential rotation that Cincinnati has going as of today. I think we poo-poo on, you know, the stream ability against the Reds. Nick Pollock has coined the term the red, you know, bringing out the red carpet, especially on the road when the Reds are on the road. Like the equivalent of Rocky Road. But with Chase Burns entering the fray here, and I think Jeff Passan had mentioned it on Twitter as well, just the potential of this rotation. They're only the Reds are only 2.5 games out of a wild card spot. Like, they're not in a bad spot when it comes to playoff aspirations. Can this rotation come together in such a way that catapults them up to being possible buyers at the trade deadline, and maybe invigorate the offense and start seeing a little bit more out of this team?
Yeah, I think so. Offensively, the problem has been, at least recently, they haven't been able to hit lefties. Versus righties, they're performing well. Over the past 3 weeks, they're seventh in terms of WRC plus as a team, 15% better than league average, but versus lefties, they're like 26% below league average and towards the bottom of the list. So, and they face three lefty starters this week, half of their starters coming up this week. So we might not see this really turn quite yet unless they can improve versus lefties. But as we get more favorable matchups, they see more right-handed starting pitching, I think that they're going to score more runs. And then, yeah, this rotation that you're alluding to, I think is very formidable in that aspect for a team that is scoring a few runs, because they, you know, with Hunter Green down, Lodolo has his moments, Abbott's been good. Now we've seen Chase Burns look like he can be amazing, but all of these guys, none of these guys would we be shocked if they go out there and get blown up.
Oh, sure.
It happens. It happens. Happens to everybody, but it's not going to surprise us with these guys. But as of, as a team, and this is a great question by Uncle Ted, rest of season Abbott or Burns, I think we're late enough in the season that I'm not too worried about innings for the young guys coming up. So I'm going to go with the upside of Burns, I think. But yeah, I think overall this rotation, yeah, especially, you know, we've seen Brady Singer's been up and down. Early in the year, he was really good, and then he had a couple of rough outings. So, yeah, I think absolutely they could end up being buyers to finally answer your question.
Yeah, and ultimately bring it back to, you know, the consideration here, and that is Chase Burns entering the rotation and then also entering our league's FAB bid considerations. I don't see a way or an avenue for the Reds to kick Burns out of the rotation anytime soon, even if we see a return to the rotation like earlier than expected by the likes of Hunter Green or anybody else for that matter. I mean, are we bidding as if Chase Burns is in this rotation here on out? And this kind of echoes the question Uncle Ted was asking. It's like Burns or Abbott rest of season. You picked Burns. Is that assuming that Burns is in the rotation here on out?
Yeah, I think so. I think I don't think he's going to fall on his face. And I think unless he does, he's in the rotation. Especially like you said, they're 2.5 games back. If they had somebody that gave them a better chance to win, they would not have called up Chase Burns. They definitely wouldn't have started that clock. So, I think he's here to stay. He was at, he had 66 innings in the minors. So he's at 70 innings for this season. But I think they could let him go, you know, 120 or so. That's about 50 more innings. I doubt they let him go over 5 innings very often. That will mean we're depending on the bullpen when we're chasing wins. But that's about 10 starts. That gets us till September from now with the All-Star break coming up in just a couple of weeks. So, yeah, I think he's here. They may skip a start or two so that they have him for the postseason if they do indeed make it. But, yeah, I think for the most part, my worry would be short outings. I don't think they're going to let him try to go too deep into games. I think that's how they'll limit the innings.
Yeah, it'll be really about his efficiency. The only way he makes it into the sixth or seventh inning is if he's just not walking anybody and he's inducing a lot of ground balls or whatever it is that can make him throw less pitches per inning. All right, well, we'll get away from the Reds now and we'll head over to San Francisco, where the Giants decided to option Tyler Fitzgerald to AAA. Of course, they have another infielder, actual infielder, joined their lineup in Rafael Devers with the trade. And so overall, I mean, what kind of impact does Fitzgerald missing from this lineup and from the, you know, from the field due to this, to the other options that the Giants have?
Well, the main issue here is Wilmer Flores has lost a little bit of playing time, but he was the designated hitter. With Rafael Devers now as the designated hitter, Wilmer Flores, excuse me, has played first base four of the last five games after only two of the previous five. So 70% of the games since Devers' arrivals, Wilmer Flores has still been in the lineup, but at first base. So that's moved some guys around. Christian Koss, who was called up, and Bubba mentioned him last night. I was looking last night on Bubba in the Bloom. Bubba mentioned keeping an eye on Christian Koss. He's a big Giants fan, and that's where I was kind of at after digging into him yesterday as I was looking at this lineup, because he has now started four consecutive games after only playing three of the first like 12 after he was called up. He has moved over to third base now. So there's been some shuffling in this lineup, but it looks like Christian Koss is going to get some everyday run here for a bit with Fitzgerald sent down. That it's coincided. 4 games ago, Fitzgerald was sent down. Koss has played all four of those games since. So I think he's the beneficiary, and I am not really interested in Koss at the moment, but it's just looking at his, it's just intriguing enough that I do want to keep an eye on it. Definitely over the weekend. Probably won't do enough that I'm interested this week, but I'm going to keep an eye on him for several days.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to be interested in somebody that's just getting more playing time in general.
Right, exactly. I just don't see much more than that yet, but yeah, I'm hoping there might be something there. Yeah,
playing time usually comes with more volume, but if you're at the bottom of the lineup on a mediocre team doesn't have your back as far as the rest of the lineup goes, it's a lot harder to get to where you want it to be. So it's harder to get excited about it. And to clarify my point, I'm expecting Rafael Devers to be in the infield. Yes, he has not started at first base yet, but I was really hoping he would play first base against my Red Sox.
We all were.
Adam. Yeah. Yeah.
not all Red Sox fans were, but the rest of us all were.
As a Red Sox fan, it's just one of those things. You're just like, I'd rather the player just stick it to the Red Sox ownership and management for just handling that whole situation so poorly. But anyway, I digress. Let's go into Arizona, where the Diamondbacks are going to be without Corbin Carroll as he hits the IL with a bone chip earlier in the week. Jake McCarthy was recalled to take his place on the roster. Obviously, this is not a one-to-one swap, but Carroll does leave a pretty big hole in the outfield. Can McCarthy or anybody else take full advantage?
I don't know about full advantage. However, he got his first stolen base this evening, Jake McCarthy, and that's what we're interested in here, right? He had 25 last season in 142 games for Arizona. He was stealing bases, although not at quite at the rate we might expect for Jake McCarthy at AAA. He had 12 in 49 games, but that's still, you know, that's approaching a 40 stolen base pace. So I guess it just seems like he should have played in more than 49 games at this point to me in the season. So yeah, he's gonna steal bases. 25 last season, 26 the season before. He's going to play right field until Corbin Carroll returns, and we're not going to see him till after the All-Star break, I don't think. Arizona hasn't made that official, but they have said sure. that's likely, and I think that is what we'll see with the fracture that Corbin Carroll has. We won't see him right when he's eligible to come, and hopefully the All-Star break is enough extra time that he gets back right away. But until then, Jake McCarthy, definitely an ad for stolen bases. And, you know, he hasn't had zero pop the last couple of seasons. Not quite getting to double digits, but 8-9 home runs the last couple of years. Double digits if you combine MLB and AAA in 2023. So he's not a zero. He's going to score runs. He's going to steal bases. And so far this season, He was hitting over 300 at AAA, hit close to that at the major league level last season, although his projections and his career numbers are more around 260. But yeah, I think Jake McCarthy is going to be a popular ad. Just remember when you're setting your bid, you're probably only going to have him for a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's not a long-term thing, but when I led that off with, you know, who can take full advantage, like it's not a one for one in talent, but it could be a one for one in playing time. Jake McCarthy could end up taking just about all, if not at least the vast majority of that hole left by Carroll in the lineup. All right, we got a couple more things to talk about with the Diamondbacks. But we're going to get to that and a couple other things after this break. All right. As I alluded to, or very blatantly mentioned, more things happening in Arizona. The Diamondbacks place Ildemar Vargas on the IL and they call up Blaze Alexander. They did not call up Jordan Lawler, to come back up to Arizona. And lo and behold, Lawler also is dealing now with a hamstring injury. He's going to be shut down for about a month in the minors. So not really an option anyway to be called up. You're a big Lawler fan in general. Is this just like kind of the nail in the coffin for the 2025 season? Are you still holding out hope that you can draft him or call him back up via Fab in, you know, the last third of the season?
I don't think it'll be the last third. I think if we do see Jordan Lawler, it will be at the end of August, when they know he's not going to get to 130 at-bats for the season. So he's still rookie eligible next year. I think that's the best case scenario now at this point. And really, when I added this note to the rundown, this was all because we were a little worried about Eugenio Suarez, who was out with an injury for a couple games, and it was kind of, we weren't really getting definitive news, and I don't think Arizona knew. These moves were in case Eugenio Suarez was going to miss extended time. Now that he is back in the lineup on Friday, this doesn't matter to our fantasy teams.
Fair enough. All right. Well, plenty of stuff happening in Arizona, but all these teams, a lot of movement happening on single teams here. Small one that I think comes at no surprise to some and maybe some surprise to others. Ben Brown of the Chicago Cubs, not only removed from any kind of rotation consideration, but returned to AAA from the major league roster altogether. Does Ben Brown make his way back up to Chicago sooner rather than later? And when he does, in what capacity do you think he comes back as?
I don't think, I know last season, late in the year, there was a lot of talk about they should use him as a closer when they were struggling to find one. I don't think we're going to see that. Mm-hmm. I think that they're going to keep him stretched out, and unless he gets to a point where they think what we've seen in the minors is going to translate to the major league level, he's going to be in the minors until they're ready to let him back in the major league rotation. I could be completely wrong about that, but that's just kind of my gut feeling there.
Yeah, I mean, besides his own struggles, with Imanaga back in the mix as well, they don't have necessarily an obvious one, you know, an obvious player to remove in lieu of, even if Ben Brown does great things in AAA. It's like, what do you pull Cade Horton out? Do you do a swap there just to keep his innings down? Maybe that's the most logical, but Cade Horton hasn't been doing poorly himself, never mind, you know, the likes of Jameson Taillon, who's been pretty consistent, if not not that great most recently, but like still pretty consistent all season.
He was
long.
Great until the last two games.
Yeah.
Yeah. The opening game of the season and the last two are
the blips on the radar.
Yep. Of his 45 earned runs on the season. So I know this isn't something we could do, but we'd be at 78 innings of 26 runs rather than 90 innings of 45.
Big difference.
So that 4.47 ERA would be much closer to the 3. But yeah, these last two outings are concerning because I had just gotten to the point, because we talked about Jameson Taillon in the offseason, about he would be a serviceable, nice innings eater. Well, he was better than that. He was going out there and giving us 6-plus innings almost every outing, with 2 unearned runs or less almost every outing. It was phenomenal. Now, these last two outings have me worried, and he's going to be on my bench until I see him bounce back, unfortunately.
Right. But even this is not, I mean, obviously they made a decision to send Ben Brown down and not, you know, take Taillon out of the rotation. So, which is pretty more, it's much more obvious. Colin Ray also not doing great things as of recent as well. So there are some rotation pieces that aren't excelling the way they did early in the season for the Cubs. It's still the obvious play to move the, you know, struggling rookie or young gun down rather than kind of move the veteran into a DFA him for worst case scenario. All right. Well, somebody else who's been a nice surprise and just hit a little bit of a wall, Griffin Canning. He left Thursday's game early with an ankle injury. Sure, looks like an Achilles, but not. I haven't seen any official word after any kind of imaging done, but not expecting to see Griffin Canning on the mound for quite some time. What kind of a hole does Canning create by missing from the Mets rotation?
Yeah, because we're already seeing consistent run for Paul Blackburn, David Peterson, Frankie Montas just came back. Even with those guys joining Clay Holmes, that's only 4 starting pitchers for New York. Sean Manaea has had a setback or 2. He's playing catch again, but that's going to take us some time. So it's probably looking like a trade, or maybe we see somebody like Brandon Sproat, but for right now, I forgot what Jason had over at Roster Resource for their lineup this week. They got Blade Tidwell in the rotation next Saturday because they do have an off day coming up. So they can get by with 4 pitchers until next weekend. We have seen 2 starts for Blake Tidwell this season, short outings, only 7 innings combined and given up, you know, 8 runs in the 7-plus innings. So I'd expect maybe we see a move here. You know, the trade deadline by next Friday or Saturday, when they need a 5th starter, by then we're almost a week into July and the trade deadline is at the end of July. We've already seen some talk, not moves yet, but we're starting to see rumors and talk. I fully expect the Mets to do something here.
Yeah. I'm not one to believe that the Mets are going to rely on a Brandon Sproat as the savior, as the glue that can kind of piece everything back together. Plus, he's also not in the 40-man. Not that we're at a point in the season where that's less of an issue than ever. We're past the June Super 2 deadline. You know, he put in some time at AAA. And so I won't be surprised to see him make his debut this year. But I do not think that's necessarily the answer to this rotation. I fully expect them to make an actual trade.
Uncle Ted brings up Tong. I've seen that name talked about a little bit other places as well. But that definitely another possibility.
You can only do so many bullpen games, though, until that's going to, even with a long relief guy or an opener / follower combo. All right. Well, going into Texas now, we got word that it's expected that the Rangers are going to put Wyatt Langford on the IL, but they're going to backdate that. And so even with the time missed, he should be back in about a week. So, you know, let's just say next weekend. That still leaves an opening, or a more consistent opening for next week for the Rangers lineup. Has anybody been standing out during Langford's recent absence that you would expect to continue And is there an obvious, you know, addition that the Rangers should make for, you know, with Langford officially being off the active roster?
It looks like Alejandro Osuna is going to get those at bats, and he came up and he was pretty intriguing. He'd shown some power in the minors, and I was somewhat intrigued, and he's 7 for 50 so far to start his major league career. But so far getting those at bats, and tonight being the his here on Friday, as we're recording, 1 for 2 so far with a double. That's what they need. Texas needs Osuna to get going so they can leave him in that spot, because it's very evident that is what they want to do in spite of his struggles this season, getting all three starts since they lost Wyatt Langford.
Yeah, fair enough. Just keep an eye on there and to see who actually gets the call to fill the roster spot. If it is another, you know, a name that could actually do something, that it's fine. Instead, if they use that roster spot for, you know, add a reliever just to have an extra arm in the bullpen, since it is such, they're expected to be such a short time, that puts a lot more faith in Osuna, in, you know, the rest of that lineup to continue to run with it, and you'll have a little bit more playing time to play with.
Yeah, unfortunately, that they've tried to give Ezekiel Duran another shot, and he just hasn't done anything. Just like we talked all last season, every time he kept getting opportunities when the Rangers had injured players, he was coming up and getting the playing time and doing absolutely nothing with it, and that is carried over to 2025. Mm-hmm.
The other name that they've called up, and he hasn't gone back up yet, that maybe you see him in this short stint, is Dustin Harris, who spent some time in the DH position earlier on in the season. So that might be a name. If Dustin Harris were to fill in this roster spot, I'd be a little bit more worried about Osuna's like playing time, filling in at a 1-for-1 ratio, because, you know, they might take that opportunity to kind of split some time. Last one here, Kevin, unless anything else came through while we've been talking, in Philadelphia, they are expecting Bryce Harper to be back, not this week, but next week during their next homestand. So we've got a whole nother week to take, you know, for somebody or for the rest of that lineup to continue to eat up those extra at bats. But once Harper is back, who is losing out on the most playing time in the Phillies lineup?
It's going to be Otto Kemp. And in spite of 14 home runs and 11 stolen bases in 58 games at AAA this season, he hasn't done that at the major league level. At least the batting average didn't kill us, those of us that were trying Otto Kemp and hoping that he had 49 runs scored, 55 RBIs. I mean, he was tearing it up at AAA. It's just not carried over to the major league level. The walk rate lower. We would expect that. The strikeout rate is actually right in line with what we were seeing. So that's encouraging, probably why the batting average is okay in the 240s. But no home runs, only one stolen base. Hopefully he gets a couple of each this coming week, because that's going to be the end of his playing time.
And I'm still holding out hope that they let Harper DH and they move Schwarber over to first base. I really want that eligibility in my Yahoo league. I just need five. That'd be nice. Anyway, that sums it up. I didn't see anything new go in, but if anything does come in, we will try to squeeze it into one of the next sections here on the podcast. But that's going to wrap it up for news and notes of this episode. As always, we missed a whole bunch of stuff that we decided not to put in, that may or may not have anything to do with your FAB considerations. If you're interested in all that, you should be listening to the First Pitch podcast with Jake Crumpler on the weekdays and Trevor Huth on the weekends. They break down all the news, highlights, and observations from every day's worth of games, as well as looking ahead at each slate to keep you up to date with everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues. And of course, with everything starting pitching, Nick Pollock has you covered on the Plus Pitch podcast every weekday morning. He records it live at Jeez. Playlist.tv/pitcherlist. You can watch them live there, and you can watch the recording on YouTube if that is how you like your medium. Otherwise, look for that audio to come out around noonish, pretty much every single day during the week. All right, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, we will get to all of our actual recommendations for all the categories one by one, but we are going to take a quick break. All right, we are back. Of course, you are still listening to On the Wire, whether you're watching us on the Tube of Views or listening to us on wherever you get your podcast. We thank you so much for supporting us and listening to what we have to say. Right or wrong, it's just a fun conversation, to be completely honest. This is why we do this week in and week out. And we find other people to talk about it with when one of us has to take an off week. And that is usually, except for the one time this year I've had to do it on my own, is usually not a problem. I just want to give a shout out to everybody out there that has ever been a guest on the show, has ever filled in for one of us, Britton Allen being the most recent one last week. Thank you so much for your time, for your energy, for just being there for the game that we all love to talk about, and just having a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. Britton and I were talking. He was recording the Palazzo podcast that he does weekly shortly after we finished, or we were talking. We could have easily just grabbed a couple beers and talked baseball for another 4 or 5 hours. love talking baseball with Britton.
Yeah. Britton is good people and a great listen. Make sure you're listening to his podcast on the Palazzo podcast, as you mentioned.
Two L's, two Z's.
Was that? Oh, yes.
Two L's, two Z's.
It's hard to forget that. I'm like, I take it for granted now. I don't even say it out loud.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Kevin, let's get into some other L's and Z's here. As I'm looking at the first name you have on the list, he's got both letters in his name. So we'll let you kick it off with the power category. If I need home runs and I need RBI, where should I be looking?
All right, I got three guys here that are close, if not universally rostered in 15-team leagues, but have a lot of availability in 12s. A couple of guys I have in the opportunity section later have more availability in 15s that would be viable for power. But these guys are going to be mostly 12 teams, although check, as you like to say, Adam. Wincell Perez is the L's and Z's you brought up there, and he is 100% rostered in the NFBC main event, but only 33% in online championships, and he has been amazing since returning. And so, yeah, definitely for power there, but only 12 team viable, unfortunately, for a pickup. Same goes for Andrew Benintendi. What I love about Andrew Benintendi is we've talked about him a couple of other times this season when he had more availability, even in 15s, now 98% rostered there, but only 29% in 12s in the online championship anyway. And I love the White Sox schedule this week. They get 3 at the LA Dodgers and 3 at Colorado. It's heating up and getting hot and humid in Colorado. The LA Dodgers is the best ballpark in Major League Baseball for right-handed hitting home runs. So love Benintendi this week. And then Gary Sanchez, right, plays almost every day in Baltimore, and he's one of the few that since coming back has been hitting well. I shouldn't say that. Baltimore as a team has improved at least slightly over the past couple of weeks. And he's only 51% rostered in 12-team leagues, but he's getting in the lineup as a DH or backup catcher on a daily basis for the most part. So Gary Sanchez is viable for power as well.
Nice. I was in a tight spot. Gary Sanchez was on my list. I don't think I ended up with him in that particular league, but it was just one of those bids where I just had a waterfall bid of like 8 catchers, all for a dollar. I'm just like, I just need to not take a zero anymore at this position. So, Gary Sanchez, especially with, Adley Rutschman being on the shelf, you know, definitely a viable option, as we kind of jokingly mentioned in the offseason as that was happening. This was going to be a position where Gary Sanchez could surprise us once again, as he continues to do. All right. Speed. We need stolen bases. We need runs scored. Obviously, we have Chandler Simpson as an option in most leagues, but you're going to have to pay up for that. If I'm not paying for my stolen bases, or I don't need, you know, 20 stolen bases in the next 2 weeks, who else might be I be looking for?
Jake McCarthy, who we already talked about as well. And then a couple of guys we have not talked about. I don't think people in, or not everybody, because some, he's 48% rostered, but I kind of doubt a lot of people in 12 team leagues that don't roster Zach McKinstry realize how well he's playing and how much he's been running recently. He's 9 of 11 in stolen base attempts on the season, but 6 of those have come in the last 3 weeks, 6 of 7 in June. In stolen base attempts. So he is 93% rostered in the main event, but only 48% once again in 12-team online championships. A guy with a little more availability in Milwaukee, playing every day now, and it looks like this could be he might get this run here for a while. Isaac Collins in Milwaukee, 67% rostered in main events now, because he's been doing this for a few weeks. Only 6%, however, in 12s. And I think he's 12-team viable, especially with the schedule that Milwaukee has coming up this week. They are at the New York Mets and at Miami, but they do not face they don't face tough pitching this week. Pretty soft matchups, landing spot here for Milwaukee all week. So I like Isaac Collins this week if you need some bags.
Just the fact that he's facing Miami, that alone, Miami is
who has allowed the most stolen bases in baseball.
Almost historical numbers of
over a stolen base per game, I believe they're averaging. So even up.
Isaac Collins can definitely take advantage, as can a good chunk of the Milwaukee lineup in general. So if you're not already targeting Miami as a team to stream some stolen bases against, you know, you need to start paying more attention and just start doing that. maybe something we can...
I saw that. I knew it was bad, but I hadn't actually looked at the numbers till yesterday. I think it's like 1.21 per game on average. It's bad.
Chris Towers was in the PL Discord talking about it, and that's what really brought it front and center. Obviously, you know, something I already was paying attention to, but not to the, to your point, not to the same extent. Like, when you start really putting the numbers in contextualizing them compared to other seasons and other teams, it's kind of it's eye-opening. You know, we talk about this in the next section. We're going to talk about opportunity and about like teams and how many games they're going to play and who they're going to, where they're going to play to take it. Maybe we start adding in to the, just the speed category, who's facing off against Miami this week. And then who's facing off in the power cup. Yeah. I'm going to think about this. I'm going
to 100%. You know, every player we talk about in every category, we could put in the opportunity section, because if they didn't have an opportunity, we wouldn't be talking about
it. Fair enough. But as we head into the actual opportunity section, let's talk about the schedule ahead. Nobody's got the 5-game work week. Everybody's got at least 6 games, but a handful of teams do have 7. That includes the New York Yankees, Toronto, Kansas City, Seattle, Arizona, and San Francisco all have 7. So not that many teams to take advantage of that extra day, but you know, take a look and see what you can do. Colorado will be at home all week, hosting the Houston Astros and the Chicago White Sox for 3 apiece. Cincinnati, on the other hand, will be away from Great American Small Park. Nobody taking advantage of that. So as long as that lineup does not, you know, kick it into gear, we got the Reds carpet being sent out in Fenway Park and at Philadelphia for 3 each as well. The minor league parks will be partially utilized. Tampa Bay will be hosting the Athletics, ironically, 4-3, but then they'll be on the road against Minnesota for the weekend. Athletics, on the other hand, will be, of course, at Tampa Bay, but they'll be hosting. I love this. I love that the Athletics are hosting the San Francisco Giants in their own AAA ballpark. If anybody doesn't know, San Francisco AAA team plays in the same park as the Major League Baseball Athletics. So it's kind of a home game for a few of their players. So, yeah, here we go. With all that in mind, Kevin, and anything else you want to consider, who's got a good opportunity ahead of themselves to take advantage on the offensive side?
All right. Because of the ballparks and 5 out of 6 right-handed pitchers, left-handed hitting, Mike Tauchman, he's who I was referring to earlier, Andrew Benintendi's teammate, has a lot more availability. Just come back off the IL, only 40% rostered in the 15-team main event, 4% rostered in 12s. And this is a great week for him, even in 12s, I believe, with those 3 games at the Dodgers and 3 at Coors Field. He's right back in the leadoff spot. And in 121 plate appearances this season, most of them out of that leadoff spot, a 141 WRC plus for Michael Tauchman.
That seems good.
I think, yeah. Another White Sox, not as much for power, and this is deep league where you just need somebody to fill in. Like, Lenin Sosa will probably be at the bottom of all of my waterfalls, because it's not that I really want Lenin Sosa, but again, the schedule that the White Sox have this week, the caliber of pitching they're facing, what the White Sox have done, not consistently, but once in a while recently, I really like the schedule for them. So Lenin Sosa, only 25% rostered in the main event, 0% in 12s. I hope you don't need Lenin Sosa in a 12, but he will be in probably the bottom of all my waterfalls for a dollar. This guy I want to bring up, heavily rostered almost universally, but the Houston Astros don't face very many left-handed pitchers. That's intentional. They do not, until Jordan Alvarez comes back, they don't have a lefty in their lineup,
right?
So they don't face many left-handed pitchers. But Jake Myers, 98% rostered in the main event, 88% in the online championship. He needs to be 100% rostered at least for this coming week, because they're going to Coors Field to start the week in the first half, and 2 of those 3 games are versus left-handed starting pitching. And Jake Myers has been hitting cleanup versus lefties for the Astros. So not a lot of availability, but worth checking for anywhere where he is available. Jake Myers is a must-add this week, in my opinion.
That's a nice call out. And as we always say, you know, always check. His availability is not that high, but he could be, you could be the lucky one in that league. I like, just going back to Sosa a little bit, and I just love the advice of, you might not even want somebody. Like, you don't even want Sosa, but what you don't want even more is the zero. So it really depends, exactly, on obviously where you're not trying to grab Lenin Sosa for depth. You're not trying to fill in your bench. You're at a point in the season where if I don't have somebody at this position, I get nothing. And at least Sosa can fill that gap. And you might not win. So you might get the next person up and the next person up and the next person up. That's fine. But it's always good to have the Lenin Sosas of the world in your waterfall bids so that you can feel okay spending a dollar and having a warm body, that's going to get you something, hopefully, especially with the opportunity he has ahead of him. All right, we got some hitters to consider. Now let's get into the pitching categories. And as we tend to do, we're going to take another quick break. All right, no more beating around the bush, Kevin. Let's get right into your... This is the way I like to see, look at this. Every once in a while, you give me one with like 1 or 2. You got
when we've had so much news.
Yes, recently,
we haven't had time to do this. Yeah.
So take a deep breath and let everybody know. I love the first one. Honestly, I'm hoping he stays in the rotation in Baltimore. But I'll let you do your thing here. Who are you looking at for an opportunity to get some wins and some strikeouts in the coming week?
Yeah. So I went through team by team. I have a few, there was maybe a handful of guys that had availability that I left out because I had zero interest, but I'm going to talk about almost everybody that has a decent availability, even in 15s. And some of them I'm not really interested in. I'll bring that up. I'm starting with Trevor Rogers in Baltimore, as you alluded to. He's available in almost half of 15s and almost all of 12s. He's at Texas and at Atlanta. Both Texas and Atlanta over the past 3 weeks as a team, horrible versus left-handed pitching. A 74 WRC plus as a team for Texas, 86 for Baltimore. I think I run Trevor Rogers out there for that two-step. His teammate, Charlie Morton, talked about him last week. Still available in over a third of 12-team leagues, and he's come around this season. I know earlier in the season he was really struggling. He had like a 1.6 or 1.7 whip. It was horrible, but he's come around. He's getting wins. He's getting strikeouts. Baltimore's giving him a little run support. That probably has a lot to do with that. Their teammate, Tomoyuki Sugano, much less availability, but he gets that at Texas as well. He has not. My concern with Sugano is he was cruising along pretty well, and now three consecutive starts, he hasn't made it five innings. That's a little concerning. For your Boston Red Sox,
I'm going to cut you off because you're talking about so many Baltimore pitchers. I got to get your take on the fact that Cade Povich is supposed to be coming back next week as well. Mm-hmm. I think he's either slated to start and or follow on Tuesday, pending his even after his blow up in his rehab stint didn't go so well. Does Povich actually kick somebody out? And I alluded to this by saying, do you think, you know, Trevor Rogers is the one that does he stay in the rotation here? Do they go?
I think he would be the one bumped if they do put Povich back in and stick with a five man rotation. And then Povich would get one of those Atlanta starts, I'm guessing. They could just bump everybody back. They have that off day Thursday, so that wouldn't affect things much. You're saying Tuesday, if he gets in there and they move Morton, then Sugano is at Atlanta.
Something to monitor over the
absolutely
weekend.
Absolutely worth keeping an eye on.
You're definitely going to get that first start out of Rogers on Monday, or not you get
which is the one step, I want though, more is, anyway. Is yeah,
of course.
Yeah, the one. If it wasn't a two-step, I'd probably be interested versus Atlanta. Definitely interested versus Texas.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Especially Langford.
That's where I would be there. For your Red Sox, Richard Fitz versus Cincinnati. And I say maybe because Cincinnati, all of a sudden, over the past 3 weeks, is we brought it up earlier, seventh in Major League Baseball versus right-handed pitching in that time. So I try to find another option, but he's got a lot of availability. Two-thirds of 15s and almost all of 12s, he's out there available. I love Eric Lauer versus the Angels. He's 49% in 15s, 7% in 12s. Slade Ciccone in Cleveland, he is at Washington. He's 90% rostered in 15s. You probably can find a better option in 12s, but he's 30% rostered there as well. Now, the Twins, I know these guys haven't been very good recently, but they both get to face Miami at Miami. Now, Miami's been a little pesky versus righties recently. They've been performing better. They're like mid-pack over the past 3 weeks versus righties. But David Festa and Simeon Woods Richardson have both had their struggles. I think, though, if we're going to use them, if we're not using them to pitch at Miami, drop them Sunday night.
Yeah, sure.
Right? That's where I'm at there. And a couple other guys I'm going to talk about, it's kind of that way, I think. Tyler Anderson gets at Atlanta, at Toronto. He's available in over a third of 15s. And we talked about Atlanta earlier, not performing to what we thought, you know, and we all expected a rebound over last season. And I don't think it's been quite that bad, but it hasn't been much of a rebound for the Atlanta lineup. And Toronto has been kind of up and down. This is my favorite, and he's available in almost 60% of 15s. And he's available in 96% of 12s, Emerson Hancock of Seattle. Now, Emerson Hancock has not been great when we've seen him this season.
Right.
But he gets Kansas City and Pittsburgh, both in Seattle, the two worst teams offensively over the past 3 weeks in Major League Baseball. So I love Emerson Hancock with these matchups to get going and show us why we heard about him when he was 17 years old. Patrick Corbin, always going to have some availability, so he's always going to get brought up. He gets Baltimore at home and then at San Diego, and they're better matchups than you'd think when you actually look at the numbers. So I do like Patrick Corbin in this two-step, at least in 15s this week. Bryce Elder for Atlanta is going to get the Angels. That's great. And he's available in almost half of 15s and over three quarters of 12s. We talked about Chase Burns. He's available everywhere. I feel like if you look at your leagues at what Mizorowski went for last weekend, and then see like who had what was the backup bid on Mizorowski? Yeah, if exactly. They can, if they have enough money to go what Mizorowski was won for, they're probably going to try to approach that, right? So if the bids were close anyway, if they weren't real close, maybe they try roughly the same thing. Just when you're trying to determine a price, if you can afford to go high on Chase Burns, I'd look at how in each individual league, because they'll all be different, I'd look at what the bidding was on Mizorowski last week. I like Andrew Heaney. He's got a two-step this week. 95% rostered 15s, 50% 12s. The Pirates are not going to score runs to back him up. So, yes, this is wins and K's category. We're looking at K's here and hopefully get away with a win. He's versus St. Louis and at Seattle. And that Seattle one, at Seattle, we think, oh, that's great, especially the right-handed hitters. And Heaney's a lefty. We're not worried about Seattle. But over the past 3 weeks, Seattle's the second best team in baseball versus lefties, according to WRC Plus for per team. And I mentioned this when Joe Arrico was here, Adam. I don't know if I brought it up when you were here. The reason I go back 3 weeks when I'm doing team stats is because it's usually between 650, 750 plate appearances. So when I'm looking at the numbers, that's a season for one player, the numbers make sense to me.
There you go. That's
why I go back 3 weeks when I'm looking at team stats. Eric Fede has not been great, but he gets at Pittsburgh and then at Chicago Cubs. That at Chicago Cubs probably scares me away, but would love to get Eric Fede at Pittsburgh. So daily leagues and leagues, Fantrax leagues where they're drafting holds, where you can change your pitching lineup on Friday as well as hitters. I like Eric Fede for that Pittsburgh start. His teammate only has the Pittsburgh start, Andre Pallante, and he's available in a third of 15s and almost all 12s. So I really like that start for him. Ryan Nelson gets San Francisco and Kansas City Royals. Both of those teams have been struggling offensively. Ryan Nelson has been kind of up and down in performance. I think this is a good get right week for him there. I like Ryan Nelson. And then all of the Padres that get to face Texas, and they all have some availability. Randy Vasquez has the most availability. I like him. Steven Kolek, he's a little over 50% rostered in 15s, but only 15 and 12s. And we think we'll see Yu Darvish next weekend versus Texas. He is 84% rostered in the main event, but only 15% in 12s. 12 team leagues, I'd be staying. Whether he gets to make that start versus Texas next weekend or not, this weekend is when you want to grab Yu Darvish.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I guess best case scenario, he doesn't make the start and then he gets a two-step the following week in theory. So yeah, there's that. You have something in your back pocket. Yeah, great. All great call outs across the board here. Love that, you know, somehow Patrick Corbin makes it on this list every single week.
That's because nobody
is actually performing.
He's always available, so yeah. I have to talk about him.
You have to. I also like
the Renfroe 3 seasons ago when he was in Boston, when he was top 10 as an outfielder in all in 4 or 5 categories, everything except stolen bases. He was a top 10 outfielder and was rostered in like 20% of 12 team leagues.
Yeah. Use the low-hanging fruit every single week. I like your 3-week rule as well for your logic. And also, just you can't use too big of a sample as well because
players change
so often. People go on the IL, people get called up, down, people go through slumps or whatever. You know, you don't always want to just look at an individual player's performance over the last like 14 days, 21 days, whatever. But when we're looking at team context, like it gives you a little bit more of a solid pull when you're looking at a short sample size of the last 3 weeks, because not as much has changed in the last 3 weeks as the last 2 months. All right. Well, lots of wins and K's to consider here as we're looking at the two steps. We're looking at those good matchups. But we also need to be paying attention to our ratios as always, Kevin. We're getting closer and closer to that almost a point of no return where you can't do as much damage and you can't help your ratios as easily later on the season. But we're still at a point where we can, if we've been doing it all season long, we can continue to do it and continue to kind of help our ratios out here. Who can help our ERA and our WHIP in the coming week?
Yeah, and stabilize it, right? Yes. They may not be a huge help as far as moving it, but they can help maintain and we don't fall off. I think is the point where I'm at when I use these guys over a couple of the guys that I had concerns about in the previous category. And as usual, I went to Rick Graham's hold up article that comes out on Thursdays, and I don't even look at the lists because when I start reading the article, he's always every week he's going to talk about the handful of guys that are most interesting to him this week, and a couple of them Toronto Blue Jays this week, and these guys both have ERAs close to 1 and WHIPs under 1. Yariel Rodriguez, who was taken over to the 8th inning job with Yimi Garcia, struggling and hitting the IL too, I believe. And Braden Fisher, both of these guys have been phenomenal since the beginning of May. Their overall numbers are outstanding, but since the beginning of May, they're even better over the past 2 months once these guys have got settled in to the bullpen in Toronto. So, yeah, both Yariel Rodriguez and Braden Fisher, tons of availability. Toronto's schedule coming up this week, 7 games. Yes, at the New York Yankees, but I am fine with that and definitely love the 3 at the Angels. So nice 7-game week for a couple of relievers in Toronto that have been outstanding for a good 2 months now.
Yeah, and this is just the ratio category, but a lot of these guys can find their way into a vulture save here or there, not to mention that
Both of them have a handful of 2-inning outings. Yeah. So they're getting 3 to 4 innings a week because we're seeing them. I looked, they're both averaging 3 appearances a week, and about once every 4th outing is 2 innings. So we're getting 3 to 4 innings a week out of these guys.
Let's not forget that just Jeff Hoffman, their closer for Toronto, has been driving the struggle bus for the majority of the season as well. So not saying that Toronto's going to make a change at that position, but maybe if there is a phantom IL stint for Hoffman in the near future, one of these guys, along with Brandon Little, will be in contention for some extra vulture saves in Toronto as well. But that leads us to our final actual category, and that is saves. Kevin, I was in the background driving helping to drive the David Lee bandwagon in Atlanta, not realizing that Atlanta had not had a save in like over a month. Never mind right. any individual pitcher getting a save there. And then, of course, Iglesias comes in and he gets a save, and then Lee gets a save. Then I feel like there were like two or three saves in a row. Atlanta's situation is still kind of up for grabs, but it does look like Iglesias has the inside track to holding on to his actual job. Any other situations in baseball that might find ourselves rostering a new closer?
Well, I was talked about the Philadelphia situation last week, and I said I'd take whoever I can get for a smaller bid between Strom and Kirkering. It looked like they were going to split. I think the Phillies might have even told us they were going to split from here on out. And then they both struggled this week. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure we won't see Romano back. I think if Romano was dropped, I might throw a dollar or two on him just to see as a spec.
Sure.
I'm looking at Grant Taylor in Chicago. I know they have 26 wins halfway through the season. So what do they have? 15 saves, probably. I know, but it does look like Grant Taylor is the guy for now. He got the most recent one. He got a hold a couple of nights ago. So I think he is the guy they're going to turn to in the ninth most nights if they continue to string a few wins together here and there like they have. So if you're really, really just digging for saves, I think Grant Taylor's the guy in Chicago.
Yeah, we always say like, a good closer on a bad team can still be very valuable as long as he is the guy.
Right. So it used to be so much more true when the worst team in baseball still had a 400 winning percentage. Those days are long gone ever since the Astros and Royals showed us mid 20 teens. This is how you rebuild. So we're not going to see that anymore when the worst team in baseball has a 400 winning percentage, but it was great back then.
Well, the White Sox still need to learn how to do the whole rebuild thing. they've got the losing down, but let's not count our chickens yet on the other half. All right. Sorry, Mike Carter. Wild card, you know, it's my favorite section. You left it blank. I love it. I love that you left it blank. You might not have anybody, but at least even if you do, it's a surprise to me. Who fits in the wild card category this week, Kev?
Well, it looks like he's struggling if you look at his overall numbers, and yeah, they're not what we would like to see. But as I mentioned, we're only a couple of weeks out from the All-Star break. The Phillies told us that we would see Andrew Painter in July. That's what they told us. I'm not so sure that we will, because yes, his overall numbers aren't good, but it's really two or three starts. And, you know, I brought this up. I can't remember who we were talking about, but I brought this up last week talking with Britton. You know, I'm not so sure in these minor league starts if it's a whole lot different than spring training, right? They go out there for a start, go work on this pitch today. Just keep throwing it, right? So maybe we shouldn't be looking at overall results as much and just be looking at the pitches. And we know Andrew Painter has nasty stuff. Unless we start to hear something imminent, this will be the last time I bring him up, Adam, because I know I've talked about him two or three times, but I keep coming back to that point. The Phillies told us that they wanted Andrew Painter up in July. And that makes perfect sense, right? 2 months of seeing major league lineups,
sure,
listening to the major league coaches, getting ready for the postseason. So I I still think we're going to see Andrew Painter, maybe not right after the All-Star break, but soon.
July is 31 days after all. It could.
That's true. Yeah. We get a couple of weeks in July after the All-Star break. So,
well, yeah, nice. And we'll see how the Phillies are faring by the time the trade deadline rolls around. It could coincide with any kind of major moves that they make or don't make, for that matter as well. So I'm going to hold you to not bringing up Andrew Painter again until there's actual a quote to utilize it. Yeah. But we'll see. We'll see.
Bryce Eldridge, we talked about him a couple weeks ago, but he's injured now.
Yes.
Right. I thought he would have been the last like big name that we might see on the hitting side. But unfortunately he's injured now. So he might be in that Jordan Lawler boat. Now they might as well wait till the very end of August. So he's still rookie eligible next season.
Nice. Yeah. Just to go up the Q&A here, just to go and call another call out for Uncle Ted, calling out Dylan Lee being a big Bucks fan. He did get the save last Monday. And then Iglesias got the save like the following day as well. So they haven't had an opportunity since all the rest of the week, and they're losing right now by quite a bit. Atlanta is. So, you know, still somebody to keep an eye out. Matt Brash got a save for Seattle earlier on in the week as well. So, I mean, and he's also pitching currently, if I'm not mistaken, in a tie ball game in the ninth.
With Brandon Woodruff. He's back on rehab again. Mm-hmm. Every time he's one start away from major league debut of the 2025 season, he's had a setback. Last one, I think it was a fluke. He got hit with a line drive, right? I think last time. He's back on rehab. Roster Resource has him starting next weekend. So if he's available out there, I'd grab him. We could see him this coming week. I would think by the following week for sure, unless we get another setback.
Yeah, I hate when the setbacks are all different. They're not related at all. It's like at least if the setback is related to the original injury, you can be like, all right, I'll cut bait. Like, but like a new thing, it's like, oh, it's not piling on to the old thing. It's something fluky. It's something different. I got to hold on longer, but I'm missing out for even longer as well if I am stashing. So anyway, rant over on that one. Kevin, this was a pleasure. Lots of great names to consider. Leave us with some final pieces of advice or tutelage as we close out the month of June.
Yeah. I bring this same topic up, but in different ways a few times throughout the season. And I've talked about, you know, the narratives that are in our heads, and things may not be the same way they were a few weeks ago. I know that ballpark factors can be very volatile. And that's the reason we typically use a 3-year rolling average, and almost any set you pull it up, that's the default, but you can change it to 1 year. And I think there is value in that. Like last season, we realized that Cleveland was a lot more home runs were being hit in Cleveland. We found out from Eno Saris, it had to do with taking seats out of the top of the stadium. So there is value, I think, in checking it out. I'm not going to rely on it and think of it as gospel looking at just what's happening this season, but there's a lot of things going on. For example, Kauffman Stadium, Kansas City, has been a top, just outside top five, well inside top 10 run scoring environment for a decade. This year it's the second worst park in baseball. Now, I think the home team can have a lot to do with this. When you have a team like the Kansas City Royals that can't score runs to save their lives.
They're waiting it down, yeah.
Has performed, so the away teams aren't scoring runs either. It's going to make it seem like the ballpark is playing very poorly. But I don't think that explains all of it. All of it, sure. Take it all the way down to second worst from a top five team, right? The Baltimore is right back. Camden Yards is back. And remember how much we used to love Camden when we got to this time of year? And it's a top five ballpark in Major League Baseball for home runs. And right behind Dodger Stadium. It's the second best. And it's getting hot up there in the Northeast. So, yes, once again, I'm talking about check on these narratives we have in our heads. Make sure they're still true. You know, for two or three seasons now, right-handed power has been zapped in Baltimore. All of a sudden, it's back to what it used to be. Even though they didn't move the fences all the way back in, it's playing as if they did. So, check on things. Don't just trust that everything stays the way it was to start the season.
Kevin, I know you're out there in your little Hawaii bubble, but just, you know, like the entire eastern part of the continental United States has been hot. And
I looked at that last week because I was looking, and Colorado was 100 degrees still right. Is this weekend. Sure. It's going to cool off this coming week.
Sure,
low
sure.
80s in Colorado. It's that time of year everywhere when ballparks change. St. Louis is one I always bring up. It gets hot and humid in St. Louis.
It does. So like in all of these.
So in April and May, it seems like a pitcher's park, but that ball will start flying in July.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how the dimensions of any ballpark, and when you are hitting triple digits in cities that aren't necessarily thought of as triple digit type of environments. You know, it was triple digits in the Northeast, you know, in Fenway and New York and down where I was in Tennessee. So, you know, your closest one you got there, obviously, is, you know, probably Atlanta and what have you. But ball's going to fly regardless. You don't have to be at the altitude of Colorado, but it doesn't hurt to be at the altitude of Colorado and also be triple digits. Right. All right. With all that and everything else, that's going to do it for episode 220 of On the Wire. Thank you all so much for joining us and listening. Make sure you throw out a rating review wherever you possibly can, wherever you're listening or watching. It goes a long, long way. We really appreciate it. After all that, I am Adam Howe. And on behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. We bid you goodbye.